Welcome to the Portland Sustainability Podcast, your resource for reducing your footprint. My name is Sean. I am a master recycler and avid podcaster. This here is Tony, the Portland State University Waste Management Coordinator. How are you today, Tony?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for asking.
And today is yet another momentous day as we continue to move forward here with building this podcast as we have our first ever guest.
Yay!
We are here today via Skype with Betty Shelley. How are you today, Betty?
I'm very well, thank you.
You may know Betty from the Portland Cool podcast when we had the opportunity to hear from her about Reduce Your Waste Project. Reduce Your Waste Project is an initiative that Betty started that is a mission to reduce waste for people and share her expertise with it. Betty is noted here for producing just one can of trash in her household per year. Pretty remarkable. Pretty amazing, really.
Definitely.
Not just yourself, Betty. It's also, I guess, maybe important to note your husband is a big part of that as well.
Yes. If we weren't on the same page, it would be a frustrating experience. But we luckily feel the same way about taking care of how we treat the planet.
Awesome. And I really do want to hear a lot about that and kind of your guys' story, and then talk some more about best practices and what that looks like for someone who aspires to model your guys' success and reduce as much as you guys do and have as little waste as you do. I'd like to hear about some best practices for that and what maybe we could do at home to be like Betty.
I'd be happy to help.
Awesome. Before we go any further, let's let everyone know where they can get some information about Betty and Reduce Your Waste Project. Go ahead and check out the website, reduceyourwasteproject.com. You can also like that Facebook page, facebook.com/reduceyourwasteproject. And hopefully that can get some more traffic there. And that's an opportunity for someone to get signed up for Betty's program there, the Reduce Your Waste program, and do the course there and learn some of what Betty knows.
And the course, Betty, it's three part, is that correct?
Yes, it's three sessions, 2 hours each. And generally 8 to 12 people are about the right size because it gives people enough time to be able to talk. It's what everybody likes is hearing what other people do and you know, their issues, et cetera, and learning from each other. So I like to have it be reasonably small.
That's awesome.
Do you have a class going on right now, Betty?
No, we finished one a couple weeks ago, but there won't be one now until I think it's going to be in February.
February. So it gives listeners some time, some heads up to hear this podcast and then go ahead and sign up and learn how you can reduce your waste and, you know, have a smaller footprint at home, which is something that Betty specializes in. Before we go further, can we get to know a little more about your history, Betty? You are also a master recycler.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, my husband and I took the second class,
wow.
And I think it was 1992, probably. I think the program started in 1992, and we saw it advertised in the newspaper and tried to sign up for the very first class, but it filled up too fast. So we got into the second class, and it was kind of the beginning of learning all sorts of new things.
Wow, that's really impressive. What brought you to the waste world to begin with?
Well, okay, so this is kind of a funny story, but I've thought a lot about that. And when I was very young, when I was probably 6, 7 years old, there was a comic book, and one of the characters in the comic book was not a main character, but it was a person who went around with a bag over his shoulder and a stick with a nail on the end, and his job was to clean up the park in this comic book. And for some reason, that seemed just really cool to me. I wanted to do that job. And so, and then I always didn't like wasting anything. I didn't want to how do I describe that? I just didn't think it was a good idea to waste, you know. So I was always careful about that kind of thing. And it's just always been a concern of mine about, you know, taking good care of how we're doing things. Do less, the least amount of harm to everything on the planet.
That's really an interesting story. That is very cool. So once you got into like this master recycler class, was that really the springboard for developing your own class, or how did that happen?
Well, no, I have to say that was really helpful. My husband and I started recycling in Corvallis in 1973 or 74. It was when recycling centers were first popping up, and he was finishing college. And you could recycle. You had to drop it off. There was no curbside recycling at that time. And we could recycle, I think it was newspaper, metal cans, and glass. No plastics, of course. And so we were recycling down in Corvallis, and then we moved up to Portland and started recycling at Far West Recycling until curbside got going. And then we did the curbside recycling locally. And what was the question?
No, just how you ended up developing your own class eventually. But that's great context.
So the part of it, so we did the Master Recycler course, and then through that, we met Jean Roy, because she was, I think, the instigator of that course. And then she and her husband, Dick Roy, started the Northwest Earth Institute in 1993, the end of 1993, October. And they, Northwest Earth Institute has various discussion courses about sustainability issues and environmental issues. So we got involved with that the beginning of 1994 and still are involved with it. But it was those discussions. So you read in the courses, you read a chapter and then you discuss it with the people in your group, again, about 8 to 12 people. And it's just fascinating to me, you know, because you learn so much, but you're having these really, really good conversations about things that people don't usually get an opportunity to talk about. So that's really what got us into realizing, wow, you know, these are the things that we could be doing and would lessen our impact. And so between the Master Recyclers kind of getting us involved with that, and then with NWEI learning a ton and realizing that our choices make a big difference.
And they have a course on voluntary simplicity too, I believe. Is that correct?
Yep. That was the second course. The very first one was called Deep Ecology, and after that, the second course was voluntary simplicity. Now I want to say there are about 10 to 12 courses. I've been fortunate enough to be on the curriculum committee for probably 8 of them.
Wow.
What exactly is the mission or approach of the voluntary simplicity? I'm not familiar with that at all.
Oh, I think a lot of times they'll call it minimalism now. I think that's kind of the new name for it. And so voluntary simplicity basically is choosing to be simple, choosing to decide, oh, I don't need to have so much stuff. I don't need to own a lot. I don't need to have be part of the big consumer society that we're encouraged to participate in. So just stepping back and having a simple life, kind of like Thoreau, I suppose.
Yeah,
that's what came to mind for me. Simplify for Thoreau.
Exactly, but the choice, it's about choice, because that's why it's called voluntary, because a lot of people don't have a choice about, you know, maybe they live in poverty, so of course that's no choice. But a lot of us are, you know, have a sound enough lifestyle that we can make that choice to pull back and just have it be simple. And it really is, I have to say, very, once you get into it, it's very rewarding. Not necessarily always simple, you know, because you have to make choices. But, for example, we've been doing, you know, voluntary simplicity kinds of practices and waste reduction kinds of practices for such a long time now that when the recession happened in 2008, our income was reduced by about 30% because my husband's on 100% commission. And so his income went down about 30%, and we didn't really feel it. Like a lot of people probably really felt it, but we just, you know, because we have a pretty light footprint, it wasn't a shock like it was for some people.
That's a good testimony to voluntary simplicity, for sure. It would also include things like deciding to work maybe a 32-hour work week if you have the ability to choose so, that sort of thing. I definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, and see, that's it's nice to realize that you can make those choices, and maybe you're not going to make as much money, but you have more life.
Exactly. That work-life balance we all try to seek.
Yeah, like there's a book called Your Money or Your Life. And written by Joe Dominguez and Vicki Robin a long time ago, and they talk about that balance of, you know, if you want to have a fulfilling life, or do you want to work all the time, and you got to buy a bunch of stuff, and you got to work all the time, you know, so.
Definitely. So just don't buy a lot of stuff.
That helps.
Well, Betty, thank you for explaining that background on yourself and your passion for waste reduction, your passion for sustainability. How long have you been running your program now, Reduce Your Waste program?
Well, calling it the Reduce Your Waste Project has probably been about 2 years. I think it's 2 years now. I've been teaching the Less is More class since, I think, about 2006.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe 2006, 2007. So the class, the three-session class, is called Less is More, Getting to One Can of Garbage a Year. And then the Reduce Your Waste Project is reasonably new.
I see. And I also would like to mark in my mind when it was that the Oregonian did the story about you and your husband about the one can of trash per year.
That was in February of 2013.
How did that feel for you guys to have that recognition and get that notoriety for your efforts? I mean, what sort of sentiments did you have? I could imagine you'd feel very proud of that and satisfied for going as above and beyond as you guys have, and someone kind of taking notice of that.
Well, yeah, it was very cool. As far as, I guess, I liked it because people could see that it's possible, you know. That was a good thing, to have it be somebody local, you know, that could do those kinds of things. And we all have so much opportunity here in the Portland area. You know, we have amazing recycling options here. It also was a little intimidating because I was saying to my husband, "Quick, don't throw anything away ever, because people might see us." You know, and some people did recognize us. A couple people that, you know, like, we shop at a particular New Seasons, and this lady said, "Weren't you the people in that article?" And yep, that was us.
That's
but
pretty cool.
Yeah, that was kind of fun. The idea that more people would hear that it's possible was the best part.
Yeah, that's a neat thing about it, to know that's possible. I mean, I can imagine having a hard time even fathoming it, even imagining the idea of just one can of trash in a household. But to see that there are people out there that are champions doing this and making it happen is really encouraging for everyone else. This can be done.
Right. And so when we didn't say in 2005, "Hey, let's just have one can of garbage this year." It's been a long process. It's just after the Master Recyclers and then reading some of the NWEI work, we just started reducing. And it wasn't an intention to have the one can of garbage. It was just over time we'd notice, oh, we're not putting as much waste out, and so let's go to on-call service. No, monthly service. At that time, different than the system they have now, you could have monthly service. And then we got down to maybe having service every 2 months. And then, you know, for a long time, we went to two cans of garbage a year. And that was with, we used to host foreign students. So at the time, there were probably three people in the house instead of just the two of us like now. And then after the cat died, then we got down to the one can of garbage a year because we were still no, I mean, I should say we were no longer dealing with animal waste.
Uh-huh. Interesting you point that out. I can imagine that would complicate things when it comes to reducing waste. Or not complicate things, but add another layer of waste for your...
Literally, yes.
So, Betty, when you hosted these students, what were some of the reactions that you got from them about the, basically Portland's sustainability and, like, what you were doing?
Oh, it was very cool. They learned a lot. And, it was really interesting to watch because we compost here at home. Because we don't have curbside service, we compost here at home. And so they saw, you know, about composting. And I just explained to them that we try not to bring waste into the house, you know, and explained about recycling. And they did totally learn a lot. And they were very enthusiastic about it, especially the girls. The boys, a little less so, but they weren't negative about it. They just... We're a little slower.
As always. No, just kidding.
But I think some of them took the practices home with them.
That's awesome.
One of the things that we did a little differently than a lot of the families that hosted foreign students was usually they all have the foreign student do their own laundry. But I didn't want to do that because that would be two loads of laundry instead of one. For example, you know, why would I want that student to use more water?
Yeah.
So I would just wash their laundry with ours, which, of course, they loved. That was a great thing. But then it wasn't going to be an extra use of water.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Tony's mentioned to me before that, you know, in your realm as the waste management coordinator, you're kind of not looking for that spotlight.
Yes.
Not looking for a lot of recognition about the good that you do and the impact that you have.
Yeah.
So
for a lot of sustainability folk, we get into sustainability because we want to help other people, but we don't necessarily want the spotlight on us. It makes us a little uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Yeah.
But I think it's important here to shine a light on someone who is making such an impact and is showing us that, again, this is possible. So with that said, you know, Betty, it'd be interesting to hear some of your best practices on how it's possible, what we can do, how we can model your guys' systems or methods and reduce our own waste. So we have a few questions here from some friends here.
Oh, okay.
This first question is kind of a good jumping off point. It's just, is what you are doing really difficult? I mean, can people do this without having to make a huge change in their lifestyle?
Well, probably, but that depends on what their lifestyle is really like, I guess. You know, if they're super consumer, no, they would have to change. but it's not that hard, and it's like I said, we just did a one step at a time kind of thing, and it wasn't in the beginning to just say, hey, let's really reduce our waste. We just decided we would stop using paper products. So because our son was at home at the time, and I was thinking, well, let's see, if we're home for three meals a day, that's 9 paper napkins a day that we throw out. Why are we doing that? And I've always been very fond of trees, and so I was concerned about trees. And so we stopped using paper napkins and started using cloth napkins. And then, and people ask about that, by the way. They say, well, don't you use more water because you're washing your cloth napkins and it's no more than, you know, if you're washing your towels, you know. So you just put them in the regular laundry. It's not an extra thing.
Right.
So we just stopped using paper products, not toilet paper. Of course, we still use that. But we stopped using the paper products and then started looking for other ways that we could reduce our waste. And one of the big things we did was shopping in the bulk section at the grocery store, you know, in the bulk bins, because that was reducing the packaging. And so we take along our own jars and bags to the bulk bins, And the good thing about that was it was reducing not only the packaging waste, but it was reducing food waste, in that if you're shopping at the book bins, you only buy the amount you need. And so you're not buying a lot of it that may go rancid or spoil or whatever. So that was another big step that we took. Go ahead.
Well, what I'm hearing from you, I think it's interesting to point out, is that it all kind of starts with, you know, verbalizing this or coming to an agreement with yourself, saying, I am going to not create this much waste. It all kind of starts there, understanding that, you know, it's not just what I recycle, it's not what I put in the compost bin, it's about what you're bringing in.
Totally. Yeah, it's that. That's the big thing, because that was what I like. I mean, I like the Master Recycler course, but it was very downstream, obviously. You know, and sometimes, I mean, I'm glad we have recycling. It's better to recycle than to throw away, obviously. But the moving it upstream to the beginning, in our Master Recycler class, it was called pre-cycling, which meant think about what you're going to do with something before you bring it home. You know, am I going to have to toss this away? Can I recycle the package? Do I really need this? Can I borrow it from a friend? All those decisions. So as Annie Leonard said, recycling is adult, like flossing your teeth. That's a good thing to do. But not bringing the stuff into your house in the first place is the very best thing.
Couldn't agree more.
It makes me wonder. I'm trying to envision my own lifestyle and the amount that I'm consuming. I'm kind of fixated on my grocery store run. Can I ask you, Betty, how often are you guys going to the grocery store? How big of a part does that come into your planning and your ability to bring in less?
And also, on top of that, what kind of selection of products has it informed, like, what you buy? So is there certain products you don't buy now that you might have bought before because of the packaging?
Well, I try to avoid plastic packaging for lots of reasons. One is, you know, that I don't want to. So recycling is, like I said, great. But so you recycle that plastic container, but then you just go get another plastic container, which is made of, a lot of people don't know that plastic is made of either a petroleum product or a natural gas product. And so you're just, you know, using that to make plastic containers that you're going to downcycle into something else. And it will never go back to being the same kind of plastic container again. So that's downcycling. So if you can do reusable containers, like I use glass jars mostly, or I'll bring my plastic bags over and over again and wash them out in between times. But the key is to really stop and think. And then, like at the grocery store, we go once a week to New Seasons mostly, on Wednesdays because it's senior day. So we want our 10% discount. But we shop the edges of the grocery store. I think people know about that. The stuff around the edges is usually the fresh products. So mostly that's what we're doing. We're shopping a lot in the produce department, and we don't use bags there. It drives us crazy. John in particular will be in the produce department, and he'll go, look at that lady. She's got 6 plastic bags, and she's got 1 apple, 1 banana, 1 onion. Why do you need all those plastic bags for this fruit? I mean, and one lady, I remember at the grocery store, I had my apple sitting on the belt, and my potatoes and, you know, all these different things. And they weren't in plastic bags. And she was kind of horrified. And she said, aren't you afraid of the germs on the belt? And I said, I wash the food when I get it home, you know, before I cook it. So I'm not worried about the germs on the belt. So anyway, it's just stopping and thinking. I think a lot of it is, do I need that? So, and I didn't talk about, in with plastic packaging, there are health effects. So there's a good book, by a woman, I've just forgotten her name, Beth Otto, I think, Plastic Free, maybe. And there are issues around plastic that people should be more aware of.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking of something I learned in my Master Recycler class about it wasn't emphasized to us so much that we have to consume, like, significantly less, that we really, really have to cut down on what we're getting, but more strategically about what it is we're getting. I didn't even really think about or was even aware of how much plasticking, how much packaging or plastic can go into some products. We were shown like a single potato that mm-hmm. was wrapped in plastic, or say like a single bell pepper wrapped in plastic. And this was pointed out to us in our class, and I had never really thought about that before, but now that I am aware of that and I can avoid things like that, that really goes a long way with my weekly grocery shop and my entire strategy for just bringing in fewer things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a big difference. And it's really just, like you said, getting increasing awareness. It, instead of just walking along with, you know, on the same path that you're always on, stopping to look around and think about it.
Let's move a little closer to home on sort of the mechanics of recycling. Tony has mentioned to me something interesting I find set up in his home, because he also does a very good job of reducing waste at home. He has set up throughout the house five different recycling receptacles,
including the bathroom.
How does that look exactly, Tony?
I have individual cardboard boxes. I'm not going to say where they came from, but they probably are familiar to people in the Portland area. And I have them at my desk, my computer desk, where I generate paper. I have one in the bathroom where a lot of plastics are generated, or toilet paper rolls. And it just makes it easier for me to have a container right there to put it into. And then on its collection day, or the day night before, I'll go through the house and combine it all into one container and put it in my roll cart out the curb. And it seems to help us in our household make sure we get the recyclable materials into the recycling.
Cool.
Yeah, that's great. I haven't heard of something like that. I'm very focused on recycling as much as I can at home. But perhaps I could capture even more if I was thinking about having these stations or receptacles in my home. How about you, Betty? How does that look for you guys in your home, where you're doing this really as well as anyone?
Well, so how it works in our house is, under the sink, we have the garbage sack, which we have had that under the sink since September now. And it's just in the garbage. It's just mostly packaging kinds of things. Like, I just put a bag from pasta in there because that crinkly plastic's not recyclable. So it doesn't get smelly, in other words, because it's mostly just dry stuff. But there are also two bags, one bag for ferrous metal, which means it attracts a magnet, so like soup cans or something like that. And then there's a bag under the sink also for scrap paper, magazines, cereal boxes, that kind of thing. And then there's a small container, two small containers, one for small bits of plastic, and one for non-ferrous metal, so like aluminum bits. And the little bits of plastic, I'm going to say that doesn't go curbside. We don't have curbside service, and we take our things to Far West Recycling. So you can take a lot of plastics to Far West that you cannot do at the curb. And also then downstairs in our basement, we have a bin for newspapers and magazines. We have a bin for plastic tubs, et cetera. And because we do still we don't make our own yogurt yet. That's this thing I'm going to do soon. And then let's see, what's else? Oh, glass. The glass bin is downstairs also.
If I may interrupt really quick, if anyone doesn't know, Far West Fibers is a private company.
Right.
Where one could bring their recyclable material to. And this is how, as you explained, you don't have curbside recycling pickup. You, on your own, bring these materials to Far West Fibers.
Correct, yeah. And it's really convenient. When we stopped doing the regular garbage service, we were still paying to have the recycling picked up at the curb. That was before the big big bins, the big blue bins. We never did have one of those.
Big roll cart.
Yeah, exactly. But I figured, why am I paying to have the recycling picked up at the curb when I could just take it over to Far West? And so that's what we do. And they're wonderful because they take lots of things, like they'll take broken hair dryers and toasters, and even like now with the holidays, they take the string lights, the little string lights, and just amazingly more things than you can do curbside. And curbside, you can't wish cycle at curbside. It doesn't work. Some people think if I put it in there, they'll recycle it. That's not how it works. Recycling is about markets. And if somebody can't make a living at taking a material and making it into something else, it's not going to be recycled. So
that's really impressive. How much money do you think you've saved over time because of the fact that you don't have the curbside service that you have to pay for?
Well, I think we probably save... You know, I always mean to find out what the current garbage rate is, but I think we save maybe to $400 to $500 a year.
Wow, that's the case.
On not having garbage service, does that sound reasonable?
That does sound reasonable. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good chunk of change for someone. That's a good incentive to look into that. I'm curious to know, or do you know, Betty, how many of these Far West Fiber locations are there throughout the Portland metro area?
Well, there's one in Lake Oswego, there's one in Beaverton, there's one in Hillsboro, there's one in Southeast Portland, there's one in Northeast Portland. I think that's it. There used to be one in Northwest, but they closed that location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to go to that one in Southeast Portland on my way to rugby games. I'd bring all my stuff with me and go once a week.
Uh-huh.
So that makes me wonder how often do you go to the Far West Fibers? How long are you able to kind of like sit on this material at home before you have to load it all up into the car and go?
So probably if we waited till the last minute, and it would probably be, every 6 weeks, maybe every 6 to 8 weeks, probably, but we kind of take advantage of, hey, we're heading out to Beaverton, let's take the recycling. So if we happen to be out there, like I was out that way today and I was going, oh, I should have taken the recycling, but I really didn't need to. So
you're not even making a special trip necessarily to do the recycling. You're already going to go to something else and you're just kind of piggybacking on that. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, we're really careful about, we used to have 4 cars and we have 1. So we had an old car that we bought in 1978 when our son was born and he drove in high school. And then, so that was one of the cars. Then we had a van that I drove, and my husband had a car that he drove to work. And then, of course, he had the midlife crisis sports car. And so then he sold the sports car. The van got stolen and totaled, which was really cool because we didn't have to do some repair work on it, and we didn't replace it. And then our son donated the old car to his high school. And so then we have just one car. And we've been very fortunate in that we live close into the city and have both been able to not have to drive long distances for work. We don't ever tell anybody they should do things exactly the way we do. It's just that these are examples that people can learn from, and maybe go, oh, I can't do that, but I could do this. So it's just kind of inspiration stuff.
That's what I really enjoy about your story and like the Oregonian article even, is that it was a gradual process for you to get to where you are. And it wasn't like you were doing a documentary about, let's see if I can do it in a year and make the zero waste lifestyle or whatever the case may be. But it was a gradual kind of organic kind of movement towards where you are now.
And see, that's what I want people to understand, is that it's not hard. It's just about making the choices, and you just do one thing at a time. And what's fun now, literally, I think it's great fun to figure out, hey, this is something else I can do. And so there's this one restaurant in Southeast in Selwood that we go to, and they give really nice takeout containers, really sturdy containers for your takeout. And so I started keeping those, so that when we go into other restaurants, I'll take in my little containers in a plastic bag, and they look at me funny, you know, like, well, what are you doing? Well, I want to use this container and not take one of yours. I'm saving you money by not using your container, and they get used to us. And I also kind of want to do a little role modeling for other people at the same time that, oh, look at her. She's brought her own container, and I could do that too. So, so anyway, we just can keep coming up with things that we can do, and you know, it saves us money, which is lovely, but it's also just not using as many resources. Because there's a statistic, I think, about for every can of garbage you put out at the curb, 70 cans of waste, the equivalent of 70 cans of waste, are produced upstream in the extraction and mining and manufacture, et cetera, of those, of the stuff that was in your can you put out at the curb.
I actually use, on my presentations at PSU, oftentimes I use this image of an iceberg that kind of illustrates that fact, that the upstream waste, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of thinking about the model at home. With you being able to not have to go until, like you said, the last minute, you could go 6 weeks at a time with bringing your recycling to Far West Fibers. The recycling is, you know, mostly cleaned out or, you know, not smelling. It's not really, you know, giving you an issue at home. I can remember when I was doing a lot of canvassing, asking people about the composting initiative. We were asking people, are you doing this? They were saying, well, no, I don't want to have this smell in my home here. You know, which is reasonable. I understand where people are coming from when they say that. You don't want to have stinky stuff. But you're able to effectively, you know, minimize the amount of trips you have because the recycling material is relatively clean and not stinky and not creating an odor.
Right, yeah. And they don't want dirty stuff at the recycling center anyway. So, yeah, that's, you know, it has to be reasonably clean to go there in the first place. So, and sometimes people will kind of comment about, well, you're using extra water to wash those things out to take them to recycling. And I'm going, no, I'm not. I'm just putting them in the sink. And when I'm rinsing my dishes, they get wet. They sit there and they get clean. You know, so it's not an extra use of water in that case.
And if you were to buy something new, the processing to create that, the water usage would have been so much greater. That's why we say rinsing out a can to recycle it, it's not going to be the end of the world when you think about creating a new can and all the water that would consume.
Totally. Yeah. And see, the problem is I think we're so far removed from how things are done, you know, which is understandable. But we had better information. I really do think everybody would do a better job if they understood where things come from and where they go, just like in the master recycler class. That was the big thing, is where is away, you know, where's this thing going to go when I'm done with it? And then in Northwest Earth Institute, I learned about where does it all come from? Well, everything comes out of the earth. So
that's great.
If we all had better information, I think we'd all have way smarter choices.
That's really great. Actually, I use hold up an aluminum can in some of my presentations and talk about where it doesn't come in the shape of a can. It comes from aluminum, and then I show a picture of an open pit mine. This
yeah.
is where it comes from. And so drawing those connections is really remarkable.
Yeah, which is very terrible. Those mines, aluminum mining, is very toxic, as I understand.
Yeah.
And a big impression on me, one time we were up at Bonneville Dam, and it shows how aluminum used to be more valuable than platinum because it was so difficult to extract. Isn't that shocking?
That is.
And now we drink pop out of them, out of something that was more valuable than platinum in the old days.
Yeah, aluminum is just littered in the streets everywhere nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
It's worth nothing. It's worth 5 cents.
So
I am now wondering, finally, with one can of trash a year or so, what does that look like mostly? You kind of explained you've got like the plastic bag that holds pasta. Is
mm-hmm.
that pretty consistent with the rest of what the trash would look like?
Yeah, and see, that's one thing I think about a lot is doing better. The longest we've gone is 16 months with one can of garbage a year, and I'd like to get it down to maybe a can every year and a half if I can do that. And so it's, again, being more intentional, maybe not buying the products in that crinkly plastic. So I don't see myself, frankly, making my own corn chips. or I know how to make pasta, but I probably am not going to be doing spaghetti noodles often. So I do make choices. Like today I made my own almond butter, and I do a lot of cooking at home. I'm grateful I work 20 hours a week instead of more, because if I worked full time, it'd be a whole different ballgame. So I would really like to make it so I don't have the crinkly plastics in my recycling, but, ask me the question again, Sean.
Well, it's just, I think we have an idea of what, you know, what does that, trash look like? I think it's pretty clear to us. It's
those composite materials, those things that are usually a mixture of multiple materials like aluminum and plastic. It's just not something that a recycler usually wants, because it's not just that heterogeneous one thing.
So, and what's in there too is like usually a vacuum bag or two, and a pair of slippers. I almost always go through a pair of slippers a year. And some stuff, like bubble wrap, those mailing pouches that you get stuff in that are paper and bubble wrap.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes some of the shipping stores will take those back, apparently, but I haven't found anybody that's doing it. A lot of things that we have, we can take to scrap, like ends of candles, little candle stumps, as I call them. Scrap takes those because somebody will make them into new candles. So that's what I was saying about in Portland. We have all these wonderful options for, you know, maybe there's somebody that can really use that material. And so we don't throw away stuff, where if I have extra rubber bands or paper clips or pens or whatever, then those go to the local elementary school because they can use them.
Yeah, you can, quick little shameless plug here, you can actually hear about scrap on the Portland Cool podcast. You can also hear about Free Geek, which is how do you put it? Like a technology reusing center.
E-waste.
Thank you, Tony. It's all there on the Portland Cool podcast. Betty, with the little time we have left, can you tell us just really quickly about your day job? I think it's kind of an interesting job that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I work at Metro Recycling Information, and so I'm there 20 hours a week, and it's a great job for me, obviously, because I can help people try to reduce their waste. A lot of when I first started, which is, I guess about 16 years ago now, when I first started, it was almost all calls about where's the dump. And as time has gone on, more and more people are getting more aware of other options. You know, maybe there's another place to recycle something. It doesn't have to go into the landfill. Reuse options, donation options. So the public is getting more and more informed all the time. And you're right about the curbside composting. When they rolled out that program in the city of Portland, a lot of people were pretty resistant at first, but then after maybe 6 months or so, we were getting calls from the public saying, wow, this is a great program. I don't have to put as much garbage out. It's really amazing. So we do hear lots of positive things from people, too.
Yeah, I think it's a really neat job. Well, I think we've learned a great amount today. I think if I kind of summarize what we've learned from you, one thing that sticks out to me is a lot of these practices can save a lot of money for the individual. There's a big incentive there. Also, we understand that this is not an impossible task. This is a feat or a lifestyle that people can do. And I think people want to do. Maybe they just need to be kind of shown the way how to do it.
I agree. I think people probably don't realize how much their choices matter, you know. I was recently listening to a story on NPR, and the person speaking said they were talking about climate change, and they were saying that individual people can't do enough. You know, they can't do anything that's going to make a difference. But of course, that's not true, because if you change a habit where you're consuming stuff and you're just throwing it away, and you decide not to do that, you make a conscious decision to change that habit, of course that makes a difference, because you're no longer contributing that amount of impact for climate change. Exactly. Does it make sense?
Yes, yeah. Totally.
Our decisions make a huge impact, and it kind of starts there with making that decision.
Exactly.
Betty, thank you so much for being with us here today. One last time before we let you go, the website is reduceyourwasteproject.com. From there, please go ahead and like the Facebook page, facebook.com/reduceyourwasteproject. Betty, thank you again so much for being with us here and explaining how to reduce your waste at home.
Okay, great. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And I think that's going to do it for us here for our first ever guest, our first interview on the Portland Sustainability Podcast. What did you think, Tony?
I can't imagine another interview going as well as that. I learned a lot.
Hopefully we can have you back one day, Betty, and, you know, hear how it's going and hear, again, how, you know, some of your students are progressing and what they're learning from you.
I'd love to do that.
All right, then. Well, let's sign it off here. Thank you for listening to the Portland Sustainability Podcast.
This is Tony.
This is Sean for Betty Shelley and Reduce Your Waste Project. Let's take action now.
Thank you.
Thank you.